What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and joining me today, Mr. Tim Newman from Analogix. Tim, how are we doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing awesome. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, how long ago was it when we had Analogix on this show for like the first time? Man, it's been like...
I want to say it was like 2017.
Yeah.
So maybe 18 in there.
Yeah. So that's right around... Yeah, that's right around the time this podcast came out, and I think you were one... Actually, I think I was debating starting this podcast, and then I was walking through the halls of some trade show, and I bumped into you and started talking to you, and I'm just like, just come on the show. And I think you might even been top, like, the first 10 to do this show.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What an honor.
Yeah. Welcome back, my friend. Welcome back. Welcome back. How was your season this year, dude?
My season was actually pretty good, you know. Southwest Minnesota, we don't have the same standard as they do in Southern Iowa. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have a ton of habitat around here. So my goal is always to shoot a 130-inch, 4.5-year-old or better on film on public land.
Okay.
So I accomplished that goal. This buck over my shoulder here, he just made the cutoff. He was 132 inches, but he was a 4-year-old, and, you know, I was super pumped.
Hey, that's a win. So, that's a win. Man, I tell you what, I look how big antler deer can get a lot of us making shitty decisions, like making decisions that are, you see one from the road in mid at, you know, you're, I don't know, maybe crosses the road or you see him last light 2 miles away and all of a sudden mm-hmm. you think you have the same opportunities as other people do and it's just not the case. And so... There was a lot of years where I struggled to get in front of what I thought was a shooter caliber deer when I had shooter caliber deer in front of me all season long. I just decided to pass them. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm at the stage in my life. I've got 3 girls. They're mm-hmm. just starting to get into hunting. They're like 10, 7, and 3. So I want to get them excited about it. Like,
yep.
I'd rather shoot a medium deer and show them everything, the process about it, than to, you know, go without filling my tag and, you know, go after the 180 that might be, you know, 2 counties over.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So,
man, I don't know. I don't get me wrong. I like chasing big antler deer and I feel like I maybe squandered an opportunity at a, I don't know, maybe he was 4, but he was like a 150 class, 3 or 4 year old in a really good part of the state. And I passed him because I was holding out for something else. And you know what happens when you pass deer? Sometimes the other deer you want just don't show up. And so that's what happened in Iowa this year. And I ended up eating my tag. So it is what it is. But we do it for other reasons than for bone, right?
Right.
Yep. Cool, man. You excited for turkey season? You turkey hunt at all?
I actually am. I got invited to a veterans hunt over on the eastern side of Iowa, up by the border, Chester, Iowa. There's a sportsman's club that does disabled veterans hunt. So I got invited to that. And they're going to put me in an Airbnb. And you know, they say they got 20 turkeys in that river bottom. So I'm stoked.
That's awesome, man. That's all. Yeah. Beautiful country up in northeast Iowa, man. I'll say this. If I die and go to heaven, that is what my heaven looks like, is northeast Iowa, right along the Mississippi River, the bluffs, the fall colors in the fall. It's gorgeous up there, man. You can't beat it.
It's a outdoorsman paradise. You've got Mississippi River. You could chase walleyes. You've got world-class trout streams in the bluffs. You've got world-class deer. I mean, it's got it all.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, before we get into today's episode, I am going to do a couple quick partner thank yous. And this is where I ask you to not skip forward, and because these people pay me, just like, let's see, Analogic is a Pradco brand, right?
That is, yes.
Yep, Pradco brand. I am also sponsored by another Pradco brand in Code Blue Sense. Do you ever mess around? Do you ever mess around with mock scrapes at all?
Yeah, I actually use those blue ropes that Code Blue has.
Yep, the rope-a-dopes. Yep,
those things are awesome.
I love putting a trail camera over top of a rope-a-dope. I don't know. It's pretty sweet because we're going to talk about mineral here a little bit too, but you talk about getting deer in front of a camera for inventory, not just for what kind of big bucks are on your property, but also for like fawn recruitment. How many does does your property have? And I'll tell you this right now, I was actually pretty surprised by the amount of deer that came to investigate that rope that were not big giant whitetails, you know, bucks, right? So it's almost like you could use it for inventory too at the beginning of the season. August, they come up, they investigate. Now you got a picture of two or three deer just kind of smelling around. And
yeah, it just gives them a perfect reason to just come right there, right in front of your trail camera.
Exactly. Absolutely. Just like a mineral lick would. So, if you want more information on all of the products that Code Blue Sense offer, go to CodeBlueSense.com, and I do have a discount code, NFC20. Check out their real and synthetic deer urines, their scent elimination products. I mean, they got a whole bunch of different stuff that you need to check out. Next on the list is Reveal Trail Cameras, and that is the camera that I personally use over top of those mock scrapes and those mineral sites that I use all year round. They have the new 3.0 versions of their cell cam, really easy to use. You take a picture of the QR code, or you scan the QR code. It opens up the camera. You can set it up. I mean, it takes literally minutes to set up the camera. Unlike the old school, I can remember my first cell cam that I got. I bet it took 1 hour to set up one trail camera, entering in all the codes and then you have to drive into town to like Verizon and try to set something up there.
SIM card loosened or whatever.
No one had a clue what you were talking about. Like, hey, I have a cell cam. And they're like, what? What's a cell cam? Right. And then you're like, I'm a deer hunter. And now they do it where you don't have to do any of it. Anyway, go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the new 3.0 versions of the Reveal. All right. And those are my partners for this podcast. Now, Analogics. All right, man, like you said, it's been a while since we've talked last. What's been happening? Let's just put a cap on it the last 5 years over at Analogics.
So we've really diversified the product line to hit the niches of the market. Like, you know, people down south wanted a persimmon flavor. So we tested a bunch of flavors and came out with the Crush, you know, persimmon flavor in a lot of different avenues. So we've got it in a block, a brick, a granular, and it's just, we've got it in a liquid as well, but it's something that's different regionally that people know that deer are attracted to. So we've been hitting those markets. So, you know, we've got the ownership calls it like the Baskin Robbins of deer feed. We have 31 different flavors.
Yep.
So we have, yep. When I started, you know, we just had apple. Well, apple bragging rights was our only attractant, but now we have a whole bunch of different flavors. And regionally, your deer herd might prefer something over something else. Here in Minnesota, we have a lot of apple orchards, so apple seems to be the winner. But in Nebraska, it might be acorn. In Georgia, it's persimmon. It's just, you know, people need to trial the different flavors and see what is the hot thing in their area.
Right. And we're at this point in this conversation, we're talking about deer attractants, right? Like bait piles and things like that.
Yep. But yep. In the last 5 years, we've actually really expanded the food plot side of things as well, because as CWD seems to creep more and more places across the U.S., they're banning the use of attractants and minerals. So the food plot market is really where the future is. And we have expanded that, you know, working on Lee Lukoski's farm for all of our trials. And then I also have some stuff around here in Minnesota, but, you know, I max out at 150-inch deer, it seems like, around here. So it's nice having really big deer down in southern Iowa to do the trials on. But we've really pinpointed what, you know, the perennials are the best. And we've got some annual clovers that are really neat, because you can plant that in a fall and have a huntable clover field that fall. Whereas the perennials, you know, you can plant it in the fall and have some growth, but it's not that huge, lush, you know, green mat that you see year 2, 3, 4. You can get that out of 1 year in a perennial clover. That's what we call our fixing clover. So that's one of the newest products that most excites me. And that's something the guys down south, where they have those really hot, dry periods of the summer where they can't get a perennial clover to make it through that whole summertime. They can just plant it in the fall after the threat of, you know, army worms has passed, when it starts getting a little cooler, and that annual clover just comes screaming out of the ground.
Yeah.
So
what kind of testing, and because there's a lot of companies out there that they'll go to a farm store and then they'll put it in a hunting based package. You know what I mean? Like it's basically licensed seed. And so what do you guys do as far as research and development on your food plot seeds in order to pick, you know, make sure they're the best possible seed, they're working like they're advertised and all of that stuff?
So we set up the trial fields literally around Lee's house. So he's got, where his house sits, he's got three big fields that you can see from, you know, different directions. And we basically planted strips of individual varieties. So he could just sit there and watch with his binoculars and his spotting scope. And he would just watch the deer as they came out of the woods and progress across these fields. And he could tell the ones where, you know, they're skipping past variety A, B, and they wanted C, you know, say of a white clover. So, okay, that's the one we're going to use for white clover. And we did that with clovers. We did that with brassicas. And we did that with beans. And on the bean one, we also did competitors at the same time. And we fenced it, and then had some that were unfenced. And then we hired a guy that his job that summer was to measure the height of beans. So you've got a forage biomass, basically. And then after the beans dried down, then we had him take samples of the pod count. So basically you had the early season forage of the beans, and then we had the pod count, and compared that among a bunch of different varieties. So where we landed with the bean blend is we've got five different maturities. So you've got those beans that are tall, stay green late. They're not going to have as many pods, but they're the forage type beans. Right. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got the shorter beans that are going to dry down quicker, have a lot more pods, and that's going to be for your late season hunting. So we've tried to kind of catch the best of both worlds with that bean trial. And we got some really interesting results. I mean, he's got a massively high deer density around that area, but we were still able to grow some beans outside of the fence and, you know, had great late season hunting. I mean, he had 100 deer come into those bean fields after they took the fence down. Right. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And the interesting part of that, we did find there are some beans that deer don't like, which you would think after, you know, it gets cold enough that they'll just eat every bean out there. But there are some beans, you know, like the Enlist style that have a little bit more genetic traits. Like you can spray them with 2,4-D and Liberty and dicamba and all the things, but the deer don't like those as much. I don't know why.
Is it a flavor thing, you think?
I think it's a genetic alteration in the bean itself that, yeah, I think it must make it not taste good, or something about the pod just doesn't seem desirable to them.
Huh. Maybe it causes them indigestion. I've heard that deer can get indigestion from eating certain types of food too much or things like that. So, man, that's interesting. What kind of research and development do you guys do before the seed is put into the ground?
So we do basically just looking at what varieties are out there, you know, named varieties. So I'll just search the universities, and you know they have different trials before we've done our trials. So I usually try and look at those studies and look at the yield results from each individual variety, because that's what I want in my food plots. I want high tonnage. I want the most amount of deer able to eat off of that food plot. So I'm looking at tonnage trials at the universities. And then I'm also looking at if they've got any data with animals and consumption trials. Mm-hmm. Most of that stuff is really sheep and cattle based, because they're testing it for pasture and trying to figure out what's going to be the best way to feed their cattle and sheep out on pasture. But the relevance is there for deer because it's biomass that they can eat.
And so then, I mean, because you're starting to talk like a farmer. I want this particular seed, and you hear it a lot in corn. It's amazing what corn can do in the driest, you know, hottest areas with the shittiest soil, right? Mm-hmm. It's amazing what that can do. So it's like hearing you talk, it sounds like there's a lot of energy that goes into, you know, even when the conditions are horrible, we still want our seed to suck up as much moisture as possible in the worst conditions.
Yep. And that's where we really came up with the holy clover idea. Holy clover is our most expensive perennial clover, but it's got a massively deep taproot. And it's sainfoin is the main seed in that holy clover blend. That is really popular out west, where they can't get the center pivot to because it's too hilly. But they'll plant sainfoin on those hillsides, and it'll do just fine because it's got a massively deep taproot. It grows similar to alfalfa, looks kind of like a bush, real small leaves on it. So the deer and elk just go crazy for that stuff, and that's something that you can grow in the eastern part of the U.S., and deer love it too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so any other, as far as food plots are concerned, any other new products that you guys are excited about, or that you've put a lot of time and energy in, and maybe you've released over the last couple of years?
So the latest ones that we came out with was a clover chicory blend. And we found a really good chicory, but Lee doesn't like chicory in his food plots because you can't spray it with a broadleaf killing herbicide because you're going to knock out the chicory. Mm-hmm. So it's really not for Lee. It's for the other people that like chicory that aren't, you know, wizards when it comes to spraying their food plots. They just want to have chicory in typically a little bit more shaded plot. So we got the clover plus chicory. That's been the latest addition to the lineup. And chicory, you know, it similar form to a dandelion. I mean, it can grow anywhere. So if you've got at all, you know, poor soil, but you still want to get a perennial food plot, clover plus chicory would be the way to go.
Yeah.
But and I've got some stuff that I'm testing this growing season that I think is going to be pretty good for the deer and turkeys and pheasants. So it's kind of a three-way blend.
Yeah, that's awesome, because I don't know what it's like where you're at, but pheasants are starting to make a little bit more of a comeback, I feel. Turkeys are making a little bit more of a comeback, I feel. But anything to help those two birds in North America would be awesome.
Yeah, there's not a lot of guys that are managing specifically for turkeys. A lot of guys are managing for deer and then shoot the turkeys that are on their farms. But this would be more of a plot that would be, you know, turkey focused, pheasant focused, and deer will eat it too.
Yeah.
So
you said something interesting there. All right. Obviously, where you're doing your food plot testing is on a highly managed farm where the guy there is really dedicated to making his food plot spectacular for his show, and so he can grow big deer. Now, other people don't have that luxury, and so if you were to not have the most beautiful looking that might be intertwined with weeds, and maybe it's just something, oh, there's a bare piece of dirt, I want to throw something on there, and I want to hope and pray it gets enough rain and sunlight to grow. What blend or food plot would you recommend at that point?
So you're going to laugh at this, but we developed this blend for Tiffany, because before Tiffany met Lee, she would just go throw seed out in the backyard and hope that it would plant, like, no sunlight really getting to the forest floor, like under a canopy, just hoping. Mm-hmm. And so we came up with Caveman Blend. It's so easy a caveman could plant this stuff.
There you
go. I mean, it's the bare essentials for a food plot, but it will grow anywhere.
Gotcha. So, and this is like a throw it down, walk away from it. I mean, is there any real prep work? Do you need any machinery for it?
You don't need any machinery. You'll get more tonnage out of the plot if you seed it into a more prepared bed. So you don't have to till at all, but if you've got a ton of weeds, cutting those weeds down and spraying with Roundup before you plant, Roundup or glyphosate, just to take care of the pressure from the weeds so that the seeds have a better chance of growing bigger. You could seed it into a weedy field and you're going to have food plot and weeds together.
Yeah. Okay.
So, which a weed is, depending on your definition, there's a lot of weeds that deer eat. You know, it's not bad to have weeds. There were some studies that Craig Harper did out of University of Tennessee, and people think it's best to have these manicured food plots that, you know, not a single weed in them. But with his trials and cameras on food plots in different places, some of them are, you know, not perfectly manicured. The other ones look like a golf course. You see more deer in the ones that are not perfectly manicured. It looks, he calls it something like snaky. It looks a little snaky. Yep. It's got some weeds coming up through it, but it's got good food plot underneath. The deer like that little bit of structure in a food plot. So weeds are not a terrible thing.
Right. And a lot of the times, like you said, depending on what type of weeds that we're talking about here, everybody that I've ever talked to has said that a majority of a deer's diet is on browse throughout the day, not necessarily a destination food plot. And so, although destination food plots are awesome, if you can add that into their natural browse somehow, that's just a win in itself.
Yeah. It goes back to what is around them for habitat. Yep. You know, if the only thing they have to eat is buckthorn, they might eat buckthorn. Like, it's not great for them, but if that's all they've got, they're not going to starve. Mm-hmm. But the more quality vegetation you put where they live, then they're going to eat the more quality vegetation.
Yep. What is your most popular food plot blend or seed?
We have a fall annual that's called the Perfect 10, and that is our most popular blend. It's good because it's got the blend of cereal grains, and then it's also got the brassicas. So it's got things like turnips and radishes and sugar beets, you know, the big leafy greens, but then it's also got the cereal grains in the forage oats, cereal rye, there's winter wheat. And then we've also got an annual clover and winter peas in there. So it's a very diverse blend. It's something that comes up easily. We grew a good stand of it this last fall, and we had really bad drought towards the latter part of the growing season. We had all our rain in June last year, flooding, you know, major rain, and then we just got super dry towards the latter part of the season. But we did catch a couple small rains, and we had a really good plot of that Perfect 10, and that seems to be the case. That's our highest selling food plot blend. It's easy to plant. You know, it's a fall annual and really lush forage brings in a lot of deer. I've got deer right now in our Perfect 10 plot. I just had a picture the other day. There were 40 of them in that plot. So there's still forage out there, and we're towards the end of February.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Okay, any other... So we talked a little bit about the food plot seed for the guy who just wants to throw and walk away from it. What about a food plot for the guy who maybe wants to try something different? Maybe he has a farm where he does plan a lot of food plots, but he's looking for maybe a next step or a different, to try something different that he's never tried before.
Yep. I would say somebody should have some acres devoted to clover plus alfalfa. That's another one of our perennial blends. The cool part about that blend is if you get a wet growing season, the clover is going to do better. If you get a really dry growing season, the alfalfa is going to do better. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like hedging your bet. You never know what moisture you're going to get. So it has something to offer to the deer, whether you get high moisture or low moisture. And that's something that is really good for the deer. We've got a yellow flowered alfalfa in there, which is unique in that it is non-bloating. So it's better nutritionally for the deer. And if you ever get cattle that get into it, they're not going to be any concerns of the cattle bloating with the alfalfa. And, you know, it's just highly attractive to deer. Alfalfa is, you know, tiny leaves that deer, they like, you know, the more tender type leaves, and alfalfa has that smaller leaf, but they also love clover. So it's a blend of two things that I think would be a good addition to any farm.
Gotcha. Now, what's your newest seed that you have out?
It's that clover plus chicory we talked about.
Oh, yeah. Okay, perfect. Yep. Perfect.
And then we also have, I should mention this, similar to Caveman Blend, we brought a new product into the lineup that's called No-Till Field Mix. And that's something that is in a half-acre bag. So it's a very similar mix to Caveman Blend, but it's in a half-acre bag. The Caveman is just a quarter acre. So
okay.
That's our other kind of throw-and-grow no-till type planting.
Gotcha. And that's just kind of like prep the ground, spray some weed killer on it, and then launch it. And then do you need to cut, you need to drag it or pack it down, or do you just walk away from it?
You can just walk away from it. It all depends on the moisture. You know, if you've got a good soaking rain coming, you're fine. If you don't have any moisture, you try and get some of that out of the soil so you can try and incorporate a little bit of dirt over the top of it.
Gotcha.
So,
gotcha.
It's really dependent on what the soil conditions are and how much moisture you have in the forecast. And it's always tough for me because towards the end of the growing season, you know, you're waiting on rain, and then you like don't see the rain in the forecast. It's like, well, do I just not plan, or I got to do something? So, I've actually tried some interesting stuff with Amazing Grains. Amazing Grains is just the three. You know, it's the forage oats, it's the winter wheat, and the cereal rye. We also have winter peas in there, but I soaked it in water in a pail, and I did different trials, soaking it, you know, an hour, 3 hours, 6 hours, 24 hours, like 3 to 6 hour soak. It's like you got a 2-inch rain, and you just soak it in water, and you spread your seed into dry dirt, but it's well-prepped dry dirt, you know, flat, and the seeds can grab some dirt, and I just take the tractor tires and roll over it so it kind of presses it into the ground. And I had a good stand of Amazing Grains with very little moisture. We did catch like a 1/4-inch rain like 10 days after I planted, but still got something to grow, if you don't get rain, it's like, how are we going to get this thing to germinate?
Yeah, absolutely. You need soil, and you need sunshine, and you need some rain.
The other thing I should mention with that Amazing Grains, I was trialing to see how late I could plant it, because I talked to a lot of guys like, yeah, I've been so busy, you know, I didn't get to the farm, you know, and it's like late September. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to say you should try Amazing Grains. And so I planted some in late September. And in Minnesota, we usually get our first frost September 28th. That's my birthday, so I always remember that. I planted some late September, early October, mid-October, and late October. The stuff that I planted as late as mid-October grew up to 4 inches, nice, green, lush growth, planted the middle of October, 3 weeks after we had frost.
Okay.
So, like, soil temp is below 50, but I'm still getting a lush, green growth out of Amazing Grains, planting it extremely late. You would never think, like, the planting window is still open, but that it's a popular cover crop, and those farmers usually plant it after they're taking their beans and their corn out, which is in late October.
Right.
So I was truly amazed by Amazing Grains germinating and growing lushly in low temperatures late in the growing season.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Awesome. Anything else about food plot seed, or anything at all that you want to talk about before we move on to the next segment?
No, I would just say with everyone's food plots, you get what you put into it. You know, you could do the throw and grow and try and do the very minimal thing, but the results will be, you know, you've got the minimal bare, you know, amount of forage for a deer. Whereas the more effort you put into it, the more biomass you can get, the more deer you can attract, the more, you know, nutritional carrying capacity that food plot could provide if you put more effort into the food plot.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Cool. And that's great information. Does Analogic have any, not necessarily literature, but videos online of best practices and, more information about how to properly use their food plot seeds, the best conditions, when to plant, how to plant, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, we have a YouTube channel, and I know we've shot the video. I don't know if it's out there and published yet.
Okay.
But for sure, we have resources on our website that help people decide on what plot would be best for them. There's a seed selector guide on our website.
Right.
They basically just ask you questions, you know, yes or no, or sizes, and, you know, what your preference is. And then at the end, it just gives you one option. So, like, right. it narrows down, because we've got a lot of options. It just keeps narrowing it down until there's just one left. And that's a helpful thing. And then we've also got a fertilizer and herbicide guide on the website.
Okay.
So it shows each product and what can be sprayed, you know, before you plant, whereas what can you spray after you plant. And that's helpful for guys to know, you know, what can I spray in a clover field to get rid of the broadleaf weeds?
Gotcha. Perfect. All right. So, let's now go to the other side of the product, and that would be like your baits and your attractants and things like that. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about what's new. I know you briefly mentioned it as far as new flavors past the apple. So talk to us about why does a deer care what type of attractants it's coming to?
They like diversity, and regionally there's like taste preferences within a herd. So we want to have no matter where you are in the U.S., there's going to be an attractant that those deer focus on. So with the Crush line of attractants, we've got five different flavors. We've got the apple, we've got acorn, we've got sugar beet, we've got wild berry, and persimmon.
Gotcha.
So between those five, apple has traditionally been the most popular. Not far behind is wild berry, because they did a study, I think it was... well, it's QDMA now, NDA. They sent out surveys to all the deer biologists in every state, and they asked them, you know, what are the top five deer forages? And wild berries, like brambles, came in the top five in every response. So, I mean, deer are wanting to find those wild berries and the forage around the wild berries, so they're just naturally attracted to the wild berries. So that was an easy add to the lineup. Molasses is also another thing that we've expanded more into. We've got a 25-pound block, and then we've also got a little 5-pound protein block, which is nice. If you've got anywhere where you're trying to feed deer a long ways off of a trail, you don't want to carry around, you know, a 25-pound protein block, but you can pop a 5-pound protein block into your, basically almost fits in your pocket, and you can just take it out and just get a good inventory. They're like a granola bar. They only last like 2 or 3 weeks, but it's better than if you just poured out a 5-pound bag of attractant, you're going to get 3 days of pictures out of it. And then the other pictures are just going to be deer walking by.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
But we've also got on the supplemental feeding side, we've added a super condensed pellet that has all of the same ingredients as our complete feed, but it goes into a diet at 10%. And that's mainly what Lee is using on his farm. We call it the AntiShield Base Mix pellet. Okay. So that has all of the immune-boosting things in it. It's got the essential oils, probiotics, the chelated microminerals, and the vitamins. And that's all working to boost immune system function. But it's in a package that, you know, it's a 50-pound bag, and you can make 500 pounds of complete feed by adding your own grains. So that's been popular for the guys that are kind of more do-it-yourselfers, but they want to feed more than corn because corn is like potato chips to deer. They want to give their deer a health additive. So that's where the Anti-Shield base mix, and that's become popular in the last few years.
Okay, so you take, is there like a recommended mix? So if you have 5 pounds of this Anti-Shield and you mix it with how many pounds of corn?
Yeah, it's 50 pounds of complete feed, you would put 5 pounds of base mix. And depending on what protein percentage you want, like right now, Lee has his feed program set up that he's feeding, I think it's a 12% protein right now, but then he goes to 16% as you get closer into the growing season.
Yep.
And then he's down to like 8%, which is basically just base mix mixed with corn in the like October through December time frame. And he mainly only does that on farms where he's not hunting, because he's got farms where he doesn't have a 190 to chase. So he just feeds throughout the season and never hunts that farm.
Yeah.
But we have on our website under the Anti-Shield base mix, there's a recommended ration.
Okay.
And that's literally what Lee feeds throughout the different seasons.
Gotcha. So you guys have resources on the website that will tell you what exactly the ratios are for the mix and how to properly mix it.
But I will say, you don't have to follow that guide specifically. There's guys that don't have access to roasted soybeans, but they might have cottonseed hulls. You know, whatever protein source they want to use will work as long as you're putting 5% of whatever complete feed, 5% of it is base mix pellets, then you're getting the nutritional benefit of the TX4.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay.
So,
all right. As far as these minerals, these attractants are concerned, what else? Like, I don't even know, how do you use a liquid attractant? Like, I'm looking at some of these bottles here. You pour it out. What do the deer come to because of its smell, or the deer coming to lick it up?
Yeah. I use liquids. I never use a liquid by itself, just pour it on the ground. My favorite way to use a liquid is to find like an old rotting stump or a log that has decomposed to the point that it's spongy and you could like tear it apart with your hands. And that just acts as a sponge. So you put all the liquid in that wood fiber and basically use that wood fiber as a sponge. And that sponge just holds the product off the ground, and the deer can consume. It doesn't hurt deer at all to eat like rotting wood fiber, and you're just adding minerals to it. It just adds a little bit of fiber to their diet.
Yeah.
The other way I like to use liquid is to add a new mineral site. I'll take and get all of the vegetation, grass, leaves off of the topsoil. I'll pour a 10-pound bag of mineral dirt on the top of the soil and basically churn it in to the top like 3 inches, put a block, an anti-mineral block right on top of it, and then I'll take a gallon of mineral dirt 180 and just glug, glug, glug over the like 3-foot area that I just churned up.
Gotcha.
And that's like, I call it the ultimate mineral site, because you've got attraction with the liquid and you've got nutrition with the granular mineral dirt 180, and you've got longevity with the block, because the block is super condensed and it's going to last a long time. So that's like the perfect mineral site is combining the three ways to put minerals out. And that's something that you can easily do in, you know, 20, 30 minutes, and it's going to last 3 months.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And so you're saying it's okay to add like an attractant with a mineral with some food, right? All in the big pile.
I would not put, because of the moisture that usually happens during the growing season, I would not put a granular attractant, you know, that has grains in it with my minerals. What I was talking about is granular mineral dirt, mineral block, and mineral liquid. And the reason you don't want to put like a crush grain attractant on that mineral site is because it will mold if it gets moisture on it.
Yeah.
So I usually keep, you know, if I'm doing a survey end of August trying to get those big velvet deer right in front of the camera, I'll look at the forecast. If I got a 5-day window where there's not going to be moisture, that's the perfect time to be pouring out, you know, the granular grain-based attractants.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep.
Is there crossover between all of this, all of these attractants and blocks and liquids as far as species are concerned? Do other animals like bear come to these as well? I mean, do you have a lot of guys using this for bear hunting?
We had so many people asking us, you know, can I use this for bears, and people trying it with bears, that we actually came out with bear attractants now.
Okay.
So it works well with bears, and we have a new flavor. It's savory bacon for a bear attractant, a liquid. That's been super popular. You think about when a bear, what a bear wants when he wakes up, you know, from his nap, or when he's about to go on his nap in the fall. He's looking for fattiness. He wants something good that's going to put some fat on his bones right away. So savory bacon is the best liquid bear attractant that we have. But then we also have guys that are feeding elk out west, typically in Utah, that they just want to have something to give their elk. So supplement gold is really a good elk feed, as well as deer.
Okay. All right.
And then obviously turkeys love it too. I mean, there's a lot of ingredients that turkeys love. You know, there's black sunflower seeds in there. There's cracked corn. There's roasted soybeans. So I'm growing some massive turkeys here in Southwest Minnesota that are benefiting off of my deer feeding.
Absolutely. Awesome. Okay. I do want to get into this EHD and CWD thing.
Okay.
First off, you've kind of mentioned CWD and how some of these states are banning mineral sites because they feel that it might be increasing the spread of CWD. I want to separate CWD and EHD for a second. What is Analogic's stance on mineral stations and the potential for spreading CWD?
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole deck with galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink. Then straight to the gym. Pre-K pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
It's a difficult subject because it's hard to study in a free-range environment. There's been studies using, you know, fenced deer and looking at interactions between the deer and feeders and saliva. So what they fear in those studies is that as deer are eating from a feeder or a condensed site, is that they're touching and then another one comes and touches the same spot. So it's like almost like the deer are touching each other.
Right.
Even though they're not, they're touching the mineral or the feed. But what I look at it as, it doesn't matter how many times a deer interacts with each other. If one of them is at the point where they're shedding the prions and have CWD in the late stages, but they're still, you know, alive and moving, one touch is enough. So in areas where there's a high prevalence of CWD and mineral sites are banned, they cannot enforce the laws enough that there's truly no mineral sites on the landscape. I mean, you look at southwestern Wisconsin, I bet you there's 5 mineral sites per section, and it's been banned for 15 years. So it's, in my eyes, it's actually worse where they ban those mineral sites, because instead of 25 guys doing it, now there's 5. Yeah, they're doing it illegally, but they're still doing it. So I kind of play devil's advocate. It's almost like if you ban, you know, pistols or guns in Chicago, there won't be any crimes, right? That doesn't work. Like, banning it doesn't work. Like, on the actual landscape, there's still mineral sites. So deer are concentrating around fewer places now than if everybody was doing it, there'd be a mineral site on every 20 acres.
Yeah.
So,
and I get it. You know, there's both sides to every story, but that's just a hunting rule, right? The other thing is, how do you stop farming practices from using minerals for cattle and things like that? I'll tell you right now, I have tons of deer show up to cattle mineral licks on the landscape every year as well. So how do you police that as you know, as well? Imagine going up to the Cattlemen's Association and going, okay, no more minerals in your fields because we're worried about CWD for deer. They don't.
When are they gonna ban, you know, licking branches, natural licking branches,
right,
and water holes? Because deer are concentrating around those things too. I mean, deer are a social species and they're going to touch each other. They groom each other. You know, they spar. Like, they have a dominance hierarchy, and that's why they spar in the early season, is to try and figure out who's going to be stronger. And then they lick each other's foreheads to kind of make that communication exchange, like, hey, this guy is going to be a bad fight for me later. I better not try it. I better remember him. And they get that transfer of biological things that is going to happen whether you feed deer or not. I mean, you look at everywhere that has banned feeding, CWD expands. Who knows if it's working or not, because we don't have a ton of data on the places where we have a high prevalence of CWD and deer are allowed to eat minerals to compare it against.
Yeah. Does Analogic ever, whether it's donating money, time, resources, are you guys doing anything to, in the research and development side of things, to help, like, maybe create a product that will help slow or help fight CWD?
Yes. The trick is, the funding is too expensive. When I approach any of the DNR biologists and tell them about this concept that I have, that if we could create a feed that could be administered to free-range deer, they would ingest the feed. Basically, it would prevent the prion from getting into their central nervous system. Any prions that they ingest would just go through them and out the back door. I present this opportunity to them, and they say, what's your proof of concept? And there was one study in Colorado that had this, basically a salmonella that was altered to grab the bad prion and send it through so it wouldn't attach to the central nervous system. But one study found it was 20% effective. So it was very low efficacy. But there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So it's possible. But that was in a very controlled environment. That, I mean, this was a couple years ago. They spent $1.6 million and they did a two-year study. And we don't have that funding. So somebody should be able to, with the amount of dollars that have been devoted to CWD testing, if they could just transfer some of that money into an actual, you know, here's what would help a future herd, then we would get further and be able to go into an area that is high endemic CWD and is, you know, they can't grow a 7-year-old deer because they're dying before they can get to 7 of CWD or hunters killing them. That's the thing that I wish we could devote more energy rather than testing for CWD. Like, why does it matter that a deer has CWD when the whole area has CWD all the way around it? What is it?
Right.
Why are we still spending money in those areas? We know that you're not learning anything. I want to advance the science, and we don't have the funds ourselves as a company, but I think I can make some connections with people that would be able to get something like that going. And that would be the future. You know, the Holy Grail would be something that you could administer without having to capture free range deer. They can just ingest it and then they would be treated and have some resistance to CWD. But the other promising thing that it's not feed related, but it's genetics related. You know, I'm friends with a lot of people that have research facilities for deer or high fences, you know, big preserves and that sort of thing. And those guys are working on the genetic side of the deer to try and breed resistance to CWD.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, if you fast forward 150 years, CWD is going to be everywhere. Populations are supposed to be going to be in decline everywhere because they have too much CWD. But if you have a resistant gene, then that deer will have a better chance to replace itself, might live You know, we haven't found the one that is completely resistant, that it will never get it. It's just the ones that are resistant take a long time to get the disease and take a longer time to die from the disease.
Yeah.
So they can live to be 5 or 6 years old and replace themselves, so your population doesn't decline like it does in the areas where you get 50% prevalence, and then you see less fawn recruitment, and the fawns are not coming out as fast as the does are dying.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's very interesting stuff there. And there's a lot of, like, you know, I just feel when it comes to CWD, we have a lot of people with a lot of voices saying a lot of things without the proper knowledge behind those things, whether that's you believe that what they're doing. I'll just use Wisconsin as an example. You know, some of these states went through a shoot every single deer that you see, kill them. And then there's other people who are on the complete opposite side. We're like CWD, almost like conspiracy theorists, right? Mm-hmm. That are just like, oh, CWD's been around forever. Don't worry about it, blah, blah, blah. And so I just still don't think they're, even after the years and years and years that this conversation has been talked about, I just still don't think there's enough information out there about CWD that can prove one side is right or wrong. And that might be a hot take. But
science takes a long time. It stinks that you can't get like really quick results with CWD because it's a long progressed disease, and to get population level impacts of any change that you do on the landscape just takes a massive effort, and there's a lot of variables involved.
Yep. So, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Now I want to go to EHD. You guys were you guys one of the first companies to come out with a product designed to attack EHD?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Break that product down for us real quick. And what is it? What does it do?
Yep. It's the AntiShield TX4, and that's an ingredient that we put into our products, and that's containing the essential oils, probiotics, chelated microminerals, and vitamins. And of those four, the essential oils, which is basically like plant extract that was tested at the University of Minnesota in a petri dish to eliminate the EHD virus.
Yeah.
In vitro is what it's called. So like,
gotcha.
Take it out of the deer and just focus on the virus. These essential oils kill that virus.
Okay.
The other three things, the probiotics, the chelated microminerals, and the vitamins, those are just super specific to the immune system of a whitetail. So a lot of the deer that die of EHD, they don't die of the virus. They typically will be having a secondary infection, something like pneumonia, that they cannot fight because they're compromised because they have the EHD virus.
Right.
So the immune system is always bombarded with different things that are trying to kill deer. But if you've got that immune system functioning and running on all cylinders, that deer has a better chance to survive EHD if they're bitten by that midge, if they are healthy. Basically, the numbers we've looked at, 70% of whether a deer is going to live or die when they get bit by that midge is their pre-disease nutritional status. If they're at all compromised, they're headed down a slippery slope. If they are fully healthy, they got a better chance coming out alive. And I think that's why a lot of the EHD loss is your biggest bucks, because they've drained their energy reserves and their nutrients, putting that into the antler growth. So they have compromised themselves just a little bit on their body. Their body is not as 100% as it could be if they were younger and just grow a smaller set of antlers. So you see a lot more loss on the bigger bucks, which is tragic because those are the ones you want to, you know, harvest in the fall. And then all of a sudden they're eliminated from your hit list because they're laying in a creek bed.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. That is crazy. It's almost like, and this is just my mind going somewhere, where...
Sorry, I'm getting enough.
EHD is... It only attacks big antler deer because it takes a lot of energy loss from their regular system to grow those big antlers. So it's almost like if the buck has a genetic disposition to grow a 140 inch rack versus a 180 inch rack, that 140 is going to potentially have a higher survival rate than the bigger antler deer. And that just like evolution will tell you that deer will just start getting smaller antlers to survive this.
Right. Yeah.
That's nuts.
It's depressing. That's nuts.
Yeah. Depressing, but, you know, is what it is. So was there any studies? No, let me back up. If a deer does get EHD and then ingests this mineral or this product, does it help cure EHD?
There hasn't been a study that I'm aware of that has gone to that level. When I think about it, I think that deer would probably die because it can't ingest the essential oils fast enough to get worked into the immune system. Like it has to have a lead time of several weeks to get the benefit of
right.
it. And typically they won't last that long if they're a naive deer that hasn't had EHD before. You know, it's usually they're going to die within, you know, sometimes 24, 48 hours.
Yeah.
So it can't be something that, you know, would be like a tourniquet to stop the bleeding. It's got to be body armor before the bullet hits.
I gotcha. So it's leading up to the potential time frame where a deer could get bit by the midge. That is the most important. So it's like
yep.
you want to put this product out right now, February, right? You want to get it yep. out February, March, let them get it in their system. And once it's in their system, they have a higher chance of not getting infected by this midge.
Yep.
Or if
the best thing to do obviously would be to feed year round, but right. obviously that is very expensive. So if there were only two time frames that you could focus feeding on, one would be that mid to late summer time frame. So like in the middle of July through August, and then the other time would be right now because they're, you know, post rut, their available food sources are the lowest that they're going to be throughout the whole year right now. So basically from like February through March, trying to get them through the winter time frame so that they can hit the ground running in terms of antler growth in the following spring. Those would be the two times that I would focus on.
Okay. All right. And so but it's not like an antibiotic where
right.
once
and
you
it's
get
not,
it.
It's not a vaccine. It's not yeah. going to prevent death loss. It just takes your death loss from, you know, might be 70-80% down to 10-15%.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, there's right. still going to be some that die. It also depends on how much they're eating of it. You know, there's deer that Lee has found dead that they weren't feeder users. You know, some deer are just afraid of using a feeder for whatever reason. Maybe they didn't grow up around him. They just came onto his property. You know, they like the food plots, but they will never go to a feeder. And those deer have died from EHD. You know,
yeah.
how do you, we got to figure out how to get this technology onto a leaf.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you, what's the best practices for getting this mineral? Is it through a feeder? Is it on the ground?
Yeah.
A
supplemental
station?
Feed is the best way because they ingest more of that than they do a mineral site. You think about when they come to a mineral site, they're going to take and lick. So the consumption is smaller, but we have formulated the product so that it's more concentrated in the mineral. But just naturally, deer, if there's a mineral site and a feeder, they're going to go to the feeder just because it's easier. It's like a buffet. There's nice, hot, warm food over here, and then there's kind of a frozen pizza stuck in the ground. Like they want the hot food that's easy to access, just out of habit. That's what they do.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay. All right. It obviously all year round would be better. You've already mentioned a little bit about what else, you know, what other times of year would be the benefit, you know, the most beneficial if you are not going to feed all year round. As far as getting deer, like, obviously, there's crossover benefits from some of these products, right? We have, you know, maybe in an area where food is scarce, a food plot would be awesome, right? It helps you get deer in to shoot them, but it also has a secondary benefit, or some could argue even the primary benefit would be for herd health, okay? Is that the main focus of Analogic, or is it the main focus to get deer in close enough to shoot them?
Analogic's focus is to find the best nutritional sources for deer so that they can grow the biggest antlers, but they have to be healthy first. They don't grow big antlers without being healthy, so it goes hand in hand.
Right.
We're trying to boost the immune system function, get their bodies taken care of, because once their bodies are 100%, their antlers are a secondary sexual characteristic in the whitetail world. So they don't have to live with antlers, but they will do better, evolutionarily speaking, if they can fight the other deer off, and typically bigger antlers will win the fight. So the secondary sexual characteristics of antlers are grown from healthiest of deer.
That's a fact.
So that's really what we're trying to do, is get the healthiest deer possible.
That's right. I like this analogy that I heard, and I can't remember who it was. It might have been the biologist from the NDA, and he was talking a little bit about health, deer health and antlers, right? So let's say this deer is 50% healthy. That means he's genetically dispositioned to have a 140-inch rack, let's just say, if he's 50% healthy. But his genetics will say if he's 100% healthy, that could be a 200-inch rack as a 4-year-old or 5-year-old, right? And so then you have these different levels. So anytime you have a superior healthy deer from the biology makeup, it almost always increases the size of the antlers if they're healthier going into the antler growing season.
Yeah, it was that study out of Mississippi State that found, because people in lower Mississippi said, we don't have the genetics like they do up in the Delta.
Yeah.
But when they took those deer from the coastal plain and put them in a pen and gave them high quality food, you know, 16% protein like our supplement gold is, those deer were growing antlers just as big, if not bigger, than the Delta deer were. Mm-hmm. So they had a nutrition problem, not a genetic problem.
Right.
And that's true nearly everywhere. People up in, northern Wisconsin, you know, their 3.5s are basket rack 8-pointers. Those deer would grow big antlers if they had better forage and better feed. It's not genetics. It's, most of the time, it's nutrition.
Yep, 100%. And that's really prevalent when they did the reintroduction of deer. I believe they pulled deer out of Michigan when they went to repopulate certain parts of the United States all those years ago. And so then you have pockets of deer that have been transferred from Michigan throughout the United States. So you always hear certain states say, oh man, this county has the best deer, or this part of the state has the biggest deer. Well, some of those deer were pulled in from Michigan or other parts of the Midwest down south or wherever it was at to repopulate. And you have those genetics for bigger bodied deer. And I believe I was talking to my buddy John from Oklahoma, and he was like, where you can see where there is a, like 1 mile, the south, the deer have smaller bodies. Their antlers don't grow as big, but you go a mile north, and I believe there was some reintroduction in that area, bigger bodies, bigger antlers. And so,
it's really, they rut at different times too. Like there's a pocket in Alabama, Black Warrior National Forest. They have deer that were introduced from Wisconsin, and those deer rut in November. And you go, like you say, a couple 10 miles south or east, and you've got deer that are rutting in January.
Yep. All right. This is a question I like to ask, and that is, who is Analogic's demographic?
I would say it's somebody that wants to take their herd to the next level. You know, they don't want to just get an average deer. They want to get an exceptional deer on their property. So they want to invest more time and energy into their herd and their farm. So they want to do a premium type product. That's what Analogic's is about. When you look at the guys that are consistently growing the biggest deer on the planet, guys like Lee Likoski and Skip Sly, you know, they've got a plethora of options for what they want to do on their farm. And they're both supplementally feeding as much as they can, and they're using Anti-Shield base mix. You know, they're doing the things that go above and beyond. Guys like Greg Glessinger, you know, he shot 3 200-inch deer in consecutive years, and he does all the other habitat management, prescribed fire, but he's also doing premium food plots and the supplements and that sort of thing. So it's just the guys that really care and want to do the best for their herd. That's the demographic that we want to hit. But we also want the people that, you know, might not have a 400-acre farm. We want to have something for them too. So we have the Caveman blend for the small do-it-yourself, you know, tiny acreage type guys.
Gotcha. Perfect. So, perfect. Outside of that, any last thoughts, products you want to touch base on before we call her quits here today?
I got to show you this before we go. This is a deer that I think is at max 2.5. I think he might actually be at 1.5. But I just found this shed, and this is a place where we supplementally feed throughout the winter. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't feed in the growing season or at the hunting season in Minnesota, but this deer I know has been eating analogics basically his whole life. And that's a 6.5-inch circumference on basically a basket, you know, at most 2.5-year-old. So I'm calling this deer Simba because he just can't wait to be king.
That's awesome, dude. That's a pretty sick palmation there.
I know. And he's like, he looks like a moose. So if this deer could get to 4.5, 5.5, watch out, buddy. I'm going to make some news headlines.
There you go. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. Yeah, one of my most interesting finds, I found a match set, I'm looking at it right now, hanging on my wall, was from a deer that, I'm not joking, it's...
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Faces are the size of a nickel. But it's, I mean, this big, just the size of a nickel, the bases are, pedicles. And yep. It's probably a 90-inch 10-pointer. So I'm guessing that's the first rack that this deer ever grew. And so I'm guessing he was very healthy and had some mm-hmm. very superior genetics to get to that, his first antler. You know, first rack he ever grew. So that's bananas.
It just sucks that it takes 5 years to grow a 5-year-old buck.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you go down to Texas and they got places where you don't have to worry about that. You just show up and they got big deer just automatically. So, Tim, man, I really appreciate your time today. Make sure you guys go and visit the Analogics website for more information. Follow them on social media, and there's a lot of cool things that those guys are doing. So, Tim, appreciate your time.
Yeah, appreciate you having me. We'll keep in touch.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps?
You got this!
and golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
Eczema is unpredictable, but you can flare less with Ebglyss, a once-monthly treatment for moderate to severe eczema. After an initial 4-month or longer dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks. And most of those people maintain skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 milligram per 2 milliliter injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.